Good morning. Open your Bibles to Hebrews chapter 10. We will get there in just a moment. It is 11:14. It is so good to be here. And it's been a joy to get to know you all. It's been a pleasure. I've met many of you, talked to most of you, and for those of you who are gluttons, you come back for more. Thank you for doing that. It's a lot. It is a lot of talking, but it's been fun. The interaction has been good. My wife Lucia is here, and we have been married for a while, and we like each other. And Lucia makes me palatable, and every man needs a good woman to make him palatable. And so you spend time with Lucia, and that's a treat for all of you. And so I'm very thankful that in God's divine mystery that he would give me such a wonderful woman. And as I told one group, there are two people that said yes to me. Jesus said, yes, I'll take him, all his sin. I'll clean him up. I'll bring him home. I say yes. In the story of Goliath, it said David went down to the river and he picked out five smooth stones. He selected, he picked a stone out of the riverbed. And God in 1984 said, I'll take that one right there. And he picked me out of this dry riverbed. And he's been taking care of me ever since. I've given him a hard time. On occasion, but the Lord said yes, and that yes says all the way. That which I have begun, I will complete, and I've never gotten over the fact that God said yes to me. I'm not sure if I would say yes to me. And then on December the 21st, 1996, Lucia said yes to me. And she's the second person that said yes to me, and that's a profound thing. You boys that aren't married yet, if you find one that says yes to you, you better not ever get over it. Don't ever get over it. It's a big yes. It's a really big yes, and so I'm thankful for Lucia. You can find us on the internet. RickThomas.net is how we brand ourselves. We have public forums there, so if you ever have a question that you want to ask, you're welcome to do that. It doesn't cost anything, so you can just ask questions. That's what we do all day long. My particular ministry in the scope of the Great Commission is sanctification. We do evangelize, of course, love evangelizing, but primarily we focus in the area of sanctification, how to help Christians to be better Christians. As Jesus said, teach them all that I have taught you. And so however it's worked out here, the way it's worked out for me is that I work with Christians primarily to help them to help us to be better people, because getting saved gets you in the house, but it doesn't give you all that you need as far as living in this world. And so progressive sanctification is a long process, and so I have spent a good portion of my life dealing in this area of sanctification, helping us to grow and mature into Christ's likeness. And so that's what I do. Let me get two business matters out of the way. We do have two books here. There's only one of these left, and this is it right here. This book is called Suffering Well. Excuse me. How to Suffer Well. It's a play on words, because we don't suffer well, and we need to know how to suffer well. Having a strong, robust theology of suffering is important, because suffering... This was my first disappointment after God regenerated me. I realized I wasn't entirely sanctified. And it didn't take long after salvation to realize I'm still imperfect. And I had to learn, I'm still learning how to suffer well. And this book, this is the only copy left. We did raise the price of this book since it's the only one left. It's now $250. Y'all can negotiate. In fact, we can take bids. Let's do that. And then this book, we have a few of these left.
And the Lord told me this morning he didn't want me to take any of these home. So I believe that means you need to buy the rest of these. There's 16 of these left. This is called Change Me. And if you want to know how to change, this is the heart of our ministry here. This book right here is the heart of our ministry. It's only $150, but it would be worth it all. I think there are about $12 a piece, actually U.S., and it's probably a little more, 16 Canadian. But anyway, if you want those, you're welcome to get those. So this is my final. This is what I want to leave you with. We do deal with sanctification as we came and interacted with all the ministry teams and a large portion of the congregation and leaders and so forth and so on. There has been a running theme through this week, and that theme has been sanctification, specifically transparency. And my heart for myself, for my wife and I, and my heart for you is that we can grow into a transparent community, that people can come through these doors and see this building as a sanctification hospital where we can be vulnerable and weak. We can come as the verse says, just as I am. And that we can speak just as we are in all of our imperfection. And that God would shine His favor, His empowering grace on that and help us to love one another because we know one another. Unfortunately, it's hard for Adamic people to do that. Adam people love our fig leaves. We love hiding behind our fig leaves, and I certainly understand. I am a professional fig leaf wearer, and I get it. And the idea of revealing more of my life to people, to appropriate people, not to everyone, but at least to one good friend, that is hard. And that is my aim through the message this morning in Hebrews and all the teaching that has happened throughout this week, is that God would grab our hearts and give us a motivation and a desire to want to seek out at least that one person and state the obvious. I'm imperfect. Everybody say after me, I am imperfect.
I am imperfect.
Excellent. It wasn't hard, was it? We can do that. And that is the start. It's called in the Christian world, here it is, it's called being honest. So let's state the obvious. I'm imperfect and I need help, all right? Say, I am imperfect. I need help. Well, that's pretty good. It's a good start. And you keep saying that over and over again. The title of this message, if you want to give it a title, it would be A New and Living Way of Relating. A New and Living Way of Relating out of Hebrews chapter 10. We will look at verses 19 through 25 specifically and divide that section in half. But living in relationship, which I am defining living in relationship as living close to another person. And what that means is that you're going to be disappointed and hurt by that person. You cannot live close to anyone without being hurt by that individual. If a person is surprised about being hurt by someone that they live in close proximity to, they don't understand the doctrine of sin. The doctrine of sin implies that if you're going to spend any amount of extended time with a person, that person is going to disappoint you. It's unavoidable. Since Adam fell in the garden, we have been helplessly unable to stay out of relational conflict. So let me ask a few questions just to get the ball rolling here. Have you ever been hurt by someone? You don't have to nod your head or raise your hand or give a testimony. Please don't do that. Have you ever been annoyed with someone? Have you ever been annoyed with anyone preaching in a pulpit on a Sunday morning? What about being disappointed or put out by the actions of another person? Now, I know that these questions are silly questions in that sense because we all have been affected by other people. And by the way, we all have annoyed people. Let's try that one on, see how it works. I have annoyed people. Okay, that was much better. You said that with conviction. That's what we want, conviction. It happens to all of us. It doesn't matter where you go or what you do. Conflict is part of our lives. The only way to successfully, to stay out of conflict, is to successfully stay away from people. And that is one of the things that has given rise to social media. Social media allows you to have this false intimacy. You can somewhat be close to people, but yet you can be distant from people. And then when they do annoy you, all you have to do is to unfriend them. How perfect is that? It's like, boom, I like you, I unlike you. What a world. We should have buttons on our head. I like you, I unfriend you. And we do that all the time. Even the internet advice that we offer in our ministry. I said earlier that if you have a question, I mean, we answer questions. That's what we do. But I know that even with what we do in cyberspace, that it is self-limiting. We can't enter into the world, the real world of the people that we are interacting with. We can't do what Jesus did. We can't do in cyberspace what Jesus did. Jesus got in people's face. He got in their bubble, up in their business, and he interacted with them in reciprocal relationships. In cyberspace, you can always present only part of the story. And as we learn in Proverbs 18:17, that we present our case and then someone else comes along and examines it, and that's always the case. And so even in what we do in a sanctification ministry through cyberspace, it has limitations. Social media is limited, an internet ministry is limited, and counseling itself is limited, which is what I have done most of my life, biblical counseling, meeting people. A counseling office is an artificial context in which people come to share their lives. I'm not the fly on the wall in their lives. In fact, as a counselor, I have to do math. I multiply everything by 10. When that husband gets grumpy at that wife in a counseling office, I multiply it by 10 because I know that we are in an artificial context in which we are communicating. But I know that at home, it's more complicated than what they are presenting to me in a counseling office. And so I feel the limitation in all of these contexts, social media, cyber ministry, or even in counseling, as much as we adore and have affection for biblical counseling. There are elements of intimacy where you can find help in all of these contexts, but the intimacy is mostly false. And the limitations circumvent the help because some of the essential pieces of soul care are not available. Essential pieces of soul care like transparency, honesty, vulnerability, and unmasked truth. Those things are accessible in this hospital. They are accessible if you want to make those things accessible. If you determine in your heart, no matter how painful it may be, that I am going to strive to be transparent and honest about my life, I'm going to put myself in a vulnerable position and unmask the truth. Now, please hear this. This is a reciprocal relationship. And we have to make sure that those of us who are hearers of the truth are mature enough to steward the truth of another individual. And I know that when people come and they share their truth with me, I know that they are vetting me. They are examining me. They want to know two things, primarily. One, are you mature enough to receive my truth? I've got some big things that I want to share with you, and if you're not mature to receive that truth, I don't want to share that truth with you. Will you gossip about what I'm about to say? Will you look down on me? Will you judge me? Will you criticize me? Will you mock me? Or will you listen the way Jesus listens? Listen the way Paul listens? And so I know that they are vetting me. And if you are going to share your truth with someone, you do want to humbly and charitably and with wisdom vet that person. Will they listen to your truth with a similar humility, a similar vulnerability, a similar transparency? And then the second thing that they are doing is they want to know if I can actually help them. Why should I share my truth with you if you can't help me? I need your help. And so can you steward my truth? Can you hold it humbly and wisely in your hands? And then can you offer me discipleship soul care? And that is the responsibility of every one of us in this room. We should be able to receive the truth of other people, and we should be able to offer some counsel. As I told the group this week, that even the woman in the well, in John 4, she knew Jesus for about 30 seconds, but she went into town, and she offered those people what she had. And so don't ever disqualify yourself from helping other people. You can help other people. In Romans 15, 14, Paul said, you are filled with goodness and filled with knowledge. Those are the two component parts to discipleship, being a filled with goodness, kind, loving person, and filled with information, knowledge. And he said, you are able to help. You're able to instruct. And so if you are a Christian, you are a good person. And to whatever degree that you are filled up, and we always want to keep being filled up, but whatever degree you are filled up, you bring those two things together, Christian goodness and Christian instruction, and then you care for the person. Now, maybe all that you can say is like the woman at the well, come see a man. That's fine, but you're helping, and everybody in this building has a responsibility to help each other. That's my introduction. Let's look at the text, Hebrews 10. We'll take the first part first and get to the second part second. The first part is 19 through 23. What Jesus is doing here, and I'm sorry, what the writer of Hebrews is doing here, he's integrating two realities. He's talking about how the Old Testament priest would go into the tabernacle, that tent in the wilderness. That was in the wilderness that had the holy place, and inside the holy place was the Holy of Holies. And the priest would go through the curtain. He would go into the holy place and go through the curtain and offer blood as sacrifice for the sins of the people. And the Hebrew writer is talking about that, and he's saying here that Jesus, this is what Jesus has done. He has gone into the holy place, and he is our great high priest, and he has sprinkled clean us from an evil conscience, and our bodies are washed with pure water. All right, so let's read it. It says, therefore, brothers, since we have confidence. Now, I want you to hear that word confidence. Because of what God has done through regeneration, we should have a God-centered confidence to enter into the holy place by the blood of Jesus. By the new and living way, the title of this message, that he opened for us through the curtain as he went through the curtain. And you remember when Jesus died on the cross, the curtain in the temple was torn in two through his flesh. And since we have a great high priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a true heart and full assurance. You see that confidence here. Because of what God has done through the death, through the breaking of Jesus' body and the tearing of his body and the shedding of his blood, we have a God-centered confidence. We have full assurance of faith. Our hearts have been sprinkled clean from an evil conscience. Our bodies washed with pure water. Therefore, we have a responsibility. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope, without wavering. You see this confidence again. We can have full assurance without wavering. This is foundational to everything that we do in our lives. We stand upon the rock. We stand upon the works of Jesus Christ. And so the writer is saying, let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. I mean, this writer is just filling us up with God-centered confidence to step out and do what God has called us to do. The Bible calls us to live differently. Live differently from superficial contexts like social media and hiding. We don't have to hide and isolate from people. We can step into the full inheritance of what God has called us to step into because of this incredible, amazing work in these few verses here in Hebrews 10, 19 to 23. And though you do have all the resources that you need to be a better relationship builder, as we learn in 2 Peter 1, 3, and 4, God has given us all we need to live a life of godliness, there can be timidity. There can be insecurity about appropriating these things, which keeps you from enjoying the biblical, relational, and in-depth benefits that you expect from a Christian family. And so even though we have this confidence based on the work of Christ in the temple, His temple, as He shed His blood, we can still be timid and shy and not step into these benefits. And if you are shy and insecure and you're afraid to be open and honest and revealing the truest truth about you, then what that reveals most of all, it starts with your relationship with Jesus. It starts in this paragraph right here. And it would be imperative for you to understand truly what Christ has done on your behalf so that you can persevere with other people. All that we do stands on that little paragraph right there of what Christ has done for us. And so our relationships with other people are tied directly to our relationship with Jesus Christ. A transformative relationship with the Lord will give you what you need to interact with any person, regardless of how challenging that may be. In fact, you can measure your relationship with God by how you interact with other people. If you come to this church building and participate in this church body, but yet you isolate yourself from this church body, it reveals your relationship with Christ, if there is one. If you are afraid to step into the fullness that God offers to us, it speaks to your relationship with Jesus. A key passage in understanding how to have strong biblical relationships is part two. In the first part of the passage, 19 through 23, the writer talks about how the right kind of life with Christ motivates and empowers you to have the right kind of life with others. A synopsis of the first part of this passage that I've been speaking to could go like this: harmonic living with others is proportional to your appropriation of Christ, the gospel, into your life. If you are appropriately applying the gospel, verses 19 through 23, to your life, you will be ready to practically live it out in community, which is the second part of the passage, how to live well with others. And so let's look at the second part. There are two things that I want to draw attention to in this verse. One is practically considering others, And then the second one is practically, confronting others. In Hebrews 10, 24, 25, it says this: Let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as the habit of some, but encouraging. That's the second word. The first word is consider. The second word is encouraging. Practically considering others, practically confronting others. That word encourage is a derivation of parakaleo, comfort, to come alongside of. I'll speak more to that in a moment. But encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. Before you can be in a right relationship with another person, you must consider the other person. The word consider in this text, in Hebrews 10, means to be a student of the person in your life. Your goal is to exegete the person. You could define exegete in a simple way, like excavation. And so I want to help Peter, but and God knows Peter needs help. Can we have an amen? That felt good. I want to help Peter, but in order for me to help Peter, I got to consider Peter. And so I have my magnifying glass, and I want to consider Peter and look at Peter. I want to exegete Peter, excavate. You don't want to help somebody that you haven't considered. I don't know if you've ever tried to help someone that you've never considered. I wouldn't recommend that. Considering comes before helping another. So excavation is exegesis is a Bible word for studying a word, a verse, a text, a chapter. Exegesis is just you digging down. It's kind of like raking leaves in the fall time, which would be in, what, July for y'all? Just let me put it out there. I realize this will be way too much information, but I'm wearing my long underwear right now. I am not lying. You can make fun of me if you want to, but my goodness, I'm going home. It's warm where I come from. Now, I respect y'all. I'm not making fun of y'all the way y'all making fun of me. I respect y'all. Anybody like Lisa and Chris, like Walker and Lucas walking around with T-shirts, it's like, oh. I have turned in my man card so many times this week, it's just pathetic. I'm trying to model what I'm asking you to do. Be humble, transparent, vulnerable, weak. What you want to do is you want to consider people. Your goal is to exegete the person. You want to unpack them. You want to spend time thinking about them before you talk to them, as James warns us in 1:19. And we want to be slow to speak and quick to listen. And if you're not a student of people, then please pump the brakes on discipling people. And so the writer here says that you want to consider. Let us consider how to stir one another up to love and good deeds. All Christian disciplers know and practice this method of relationship building. Even while a person is talking, you are actively listening to what they are saying. You're hearing what they're saying. You're hearing what they're not saying. You're trying to discern their worldview and their presuppositions and their categories and their interpretive grid and their shaping influences and all the things that have made them into the individual that they are right now. How they got here from there. And you're trying to understand that because you are considering them. This is what God does for us. He considers us. He knows our frame. He knows that we're from the dust. He knows the very hairs of our head. God considers us. And Jesus even said that. He gave us an illustration of that in Matthew 6. Consider the lilies. God is a considering God. And we want to imitate Him that way. It's a communicable attribute to be able to consider other people, that God gives us the ability to do that. And we want to exercise that gift of grace. It's how Jesus listened to people. He wanted to fully know them. He wanted to know what was in them. In fact, you read that in John 2, 24 and 25. John wrote many years after. He was writing that text in John 2. Many years after that event when Jesus was talking to the Pharisees in John 2. And John said, looking back on that moment, he said, nobody needed to tell Jesus about man, for he knew what was in man. Because Jesus considered people. And we want to be students of humanity. We want to know people because we want to consider, because we want to help them. And that's why he could speak the truth in love. He knew his audience. You cannot help a person if you have not spent time considering them. A healthy Christian community is always considering each other, not with judgment, not uncharitably, but out of a heart of love and a redemptive attitude. One of the things that we know, and you have already admitted it, you're messed up. virtually all of you who said it, you said you were imperfect. We're talking about anger in the Sunday school hour, and I asked how many have been angry, and I think everybody raised their hands, but I told those who didn't raise their hands, you struggle with anger and lying. And for those of you who are imperfect, you struggle with imperfection, and part of your imperfection is lying. And so a healthy Christian community is always considering each other because we know that everybody in the community is messed up. I want people studying me. I want people exegeting me. It's how we parent. It's how we have a marriage. I want my wife to study me. And she does because I want my wife to care for me. I want her to disciple me. And as our children are getting older, I mean, they already see our imperfections. And so it's not a matter of do they know we are imperfect. That's kind of foolish. Obviously they do. So then it's a matter of teaching them how to care for their parents. And now they are at that age where they can bring effective soul care to their parents because they're in their teenage years. And that's a wonderful time to have these extra disciplers in your home. How beautiful is that? A discipleship community right there in your home, your spouse and your children. That's wealth. You're rich. And then you come in here, all of these families come in here into this body. It is a sanctification community. A healthy Christian community is always considering each other. God has called you to consider how to help people to be a better reflection of Jesus Christ. And so the text says, wherever the text is, let us consider one another. Let us consider to stir up one another in love and in good deeds. Let me ask you a couple of questions about this idea. Do you have people in your life who think about you? Do you have people in your life who think about you? I know your elders do. Richard just said it. They're going through the alphabet. How cool is that? I sat in the elder meeting the other night, and I heard them thinking about some of you. It was good. It was good. But I listened to that other night, and Richard reminded me of that just a while ago. They're considering you. How beautiful is that? You do have people in your life who consider you, by the way. It was kind of implied with what Richard said. Do you have other people in your life who consider you? Do you have people in your life who have given you permission to speak into their lives? Perhaps some of you would want to leave the meeting today and phone a friend and say, I give you permission to speak into my life. I want you to consider me. I know you can help me. I want you to consider me. Please consider me. Are you doing life with other individuals who are committed to this kind of one anothering? Point number one is practically considering each other. Point number two is practically confronting others. The word stir up, words stir up, can also be translated, hold on, spur, provoke, or even to irritate each other biblically. Yes, irritate. The idea with irritating is not a sinful one. Not in the context of this passage. It's not a sinful connotation to that word irritate in the context of this passage. Maybe in the context of some of your relationships, irritate means other things, sinful. But in the context that the Hebrew writer is writing, it is not. It is a command that means you are to intentionally be intrusive in other people's lives. If you have people around you who are not allowed to disagree with you, then you will not grow. And so maybe that person, maybe this message is irritating you. I hope it is. In the context of, I hope the way the message is being delivered. If you are too touchy, too insecure, too self-important, too image-conscious, or too self-righteous, You're heading towards spiritual death. The sins that can most destroy you are the ones that you cannot see. The most dangerous part of our sin problem is our blindness to our blindness. The deceitfulness of sin causes us to minimize and to rationalize and to justify and even never admit what is wrong with us. The mark of a mature Christian community is people who do not want to be blind to their sin. This kind of authenticity requires friends who are willing to go below the surface of each other's lives. May I ask you a few questions? Have you given your friends permission to disagree with you? Can your friends disagree with you without sinful reactions from you? This is, if we want to know what a bibliocentric, Christocentric community of believers looks like, this is what the Hebrew writer is teaching us. We are to consider one another, to stir one another up, to spur one another on, to lovingly irritate one another. Many church communities don't live this way because we prefer to live in our Adamic lives behind our fig leaves. But he's calling us to do more than that because we're standing on the confidence of what Jesus did when he entered into the holiest of all with his body and his blood. We have full assurance of faith and we stand on that confidence. And because of the gospel, we have nothing to fear, nothing to protect, and nothing to hide. And that's what the Hebrew writer was teaching us in 19 through 23. And as you stand on that, you can remove those fig leaves. Are you willing to lovingly disagree with your friends for their good and God's glory? Do you live in a community where intentional intrusive living is the norm? I guess there were three points to this. Biblically considering, biblically confronting. Sounds like a bad sermon, you know, when the preacher says, and in closing, and 30 minutes later, practically comforting. The Greek word that I mentioned earlier, encourage, parakaleo, it means to come alongside another person. This is a broad word in this text. It's a broad word. Coming alongside another person is a critical thought to this text. And while you are confronting and correcting an individual in the context of spurring them on to loving good works, it is imperative for them to know that you are for them. And so I am going to consider Peter. I'm exegeting Peter. And then I want to irritate Peter. Don't go there. In the biblical love that I want to spur him on. But this word, comfort, it always wants to be contextualized in comfort. And the way that helps me to think about this, I call it the for me aspect of the gospel. In Romans 8:31, God said, Paul said, if God is for you, who can be against you? If God is for you, who can be against you? And I want to model that in people's lives. The people that I care for, I want them to know that I'm for them. I want to model that as well. If God is for me, who can be against me? I want to be for him. I want him to know that I am for him. You should never correct a person or help a person or confront a person or lovingly irritate a person if they don't know that you are for them. You want to practically comfort them. The for me aspect of any relationship is at the heart of the gospel. The main reason any Christian is willing to receive the Lord's corrective care is because every Christian knows that God loves them. We receive God's corrective care because he loves us, and we want people to receive our corrective care, and they must know that we love them. It is unwise, unbiblical, and unkind to correct any person that you are not for. It doesn't mean that you are for their sin. You're not for their sin. You can be for a person and not for their sin if you do not get this right in your heart and delivery. Your corrective care may come across as punitive rather than redemptive. The most important practice in bringing restorative care is prayer. Meaning, if you have not spent time praying for the person, praying about the person that you are going to bring correction to, you may have a sinful edge to what you are going to do. In such cases, your care will come across as harsh and unkind and non-redemptive. If you spent time before the Father bringing the annoying people in your life before God while pleading with God to adjust your attitude, your thoughts, your words, your actions toward them, then you will more than likely build up that annoying person rather than tearing them down, which is what Paul said in Ephesians 4:29, let our words build up that we don't have corrupting speech. A few more questions and we'll wrap up. How often do you pray for those you need to correct? Parents need to learn this. If we are not prayerfully taking our children before the Lord when they do children stuff, our correction of our children will come across harsh and unkind, and our children will not feel that we parents are for them. Thus, we must spend much time in prayer before God with the people that we are correcting, those especially who are closest to us. Do those you biblically irritate, do they feel your affection for them? Even though you bring hard corrective care to that person, they should feel your affection for them. Could those you bring correction to make a case for how you are for them? Sometimes in counseling, I will ask the counselee, how did that come across? Do you sense that I love you? Do you believe that I'm for you, even though I said a very hard thing to you? You cannot draw near to God on your own. You need a community to spur you on, and that's the heart of this text here. The author of Hebrews knew the dire straits his readers were in, which is why he used strong language to motivate them toward love and good works. People were murdering them. He knew the hardship that they were in. And if you put that into context of our lives, we are, as you said earlier, we're in a polarized world. Black is getting blacker and white is getting whiter. Light is getting lighter and dark is getting darker. We're in a very hard world, and it's not going to get better. And so just imagine that if you're in a hard and polarized world, this is the message. We need to be reminded that we are standing on the confidence of what God did on the cross and in the tomb. And upon that confidence, we draw near with full assurance of faith. And we come together as a community because we need each. We can't isolate from each other. We're already isolated from the world. The world hates us. And we can't isolate in our little silos within this auditorium. And so the writer of Hebrews is saying, let us consider one another. Think deeply about every person within your sphere of influence. And then ask God to motivate you to come alongside and help this person to take their fig leaves off. And you do that with encouragement, motivating by grace and comfort. We must do this or we will be ripped apart from the inside out. His twofold aim in this text was to elevate the power of the gospel while giving them practical instruction on how to mobilize as a community to strengthen each other. My prayer is through all that has happened this week and the many contexts in which I've spoken, it has been some theme of this. This seemed to be the direction that God has been leading this community here. And so three final questions and I'm done. Do you live in this kind of community? Individually, Do you live in this kind of community? Do you have people considering you and confronting you and comforting you? What do you need to do to either create or sustain this sort of community? And then number three, how does being hurt by others hinder you from engaging others in real community? Because that's a reality. As I said to the group this weekend, imperfect people can only help people imperfectly. And so as imperfect people help you, they will do it imperfectly, but we want to make sure that though we receive imperfect care, that we don't run and hide, that we keep persevering because we are standing upon the confidence of what God has done through the cross and the tomb. Thank you so much for letting Rick and Lucia serve you this week. It has been a blast. It's been fun, and I'm most grateful. Peter.